Hello and welcome to This Week in Quality. It's episode 118. It's Friday, the 9th of January, 2026. That's the first time I've said that on a This Week in Quality. Thank you.
Really get things going again. I've been back at work a few days, but has the year really even started until we've had a This Week in Quality?
This is a great question. Please, folks who are joining us live, please try and answer that question in the chat. Has the year started? Has the year even started if we haven't had This Week in Quality? Great question. Great question. So as I mentioned, for those joining live, thanks for participating in real time. And also welcome to our podcast listeners. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us and revisiting This Week in Quality. We do have a code of conduct in place for everyone who is joining us live. That's available on ministryoftesting.com. So if you are active in the chat or you join us on stage a little bit later, please be mindful of that code of conduct. Wow, what a year, 2026. Lots to do, lots to achieve. Talking of which, and this is a bit of a preview for next week's This Week in Quality, we're going to have a session around goal setting. And there is an opportunity for people to share their goals for 2026. We have a challenge that will be going live next week where you can earn a badge for sharing your goal, your goals for 2026. So earning a badge is a great way to fill up your Ministry of Testing profile. You can post that as a memory or post it as an observatory link if you're linking to your personal blog post. As long as you tag it with my-goals, then we can spot that and we can administer a badge. So it's a nice way to start the year, but we're going to dive into that a little bit more next year. But if you want to get ahead of the game, you're more than welcome to get started already. There is a collection started. So some folks have already been adding their goals. So do go check them out for inspiration. Great. Also, that is connected to a recent post that Rosie put out called Fill Up Your MOT Profile. Definitely helps Team MOT understand what folks are up to. It helps us make decisions about who could be a speaker or a workshop host at Moticon, for example. So I encourage you to go check that out. And also, the theme for this year will be about helping people fill up your MOT profile. We want to know what you're up to. We want to know what your goals are, and that will help the community and Team MOT work out how best to serve you and help you and support you in your career growth. So the more you're up for sharing, the better we can provide support for your career. Okay, final one from me, Ben, before we dive into a bit more of a topic this session. I want to call out the MOT Ambassadors Program. Now, we have an incredible bunch of ambassadors who have been with us in 2025, and we are opening up again for folks to either as an ambassador to reapply or for folks out there who want to apply for the first time to become an MOT ambassador. They are trusted members of our community, including yourself, Ben, who understand and represent the MOT vision, values, and ethos and have the community at the heart of everything they do. They're just awesome people, and we love collaborating with the ambassadors. I'm going to share a link in the chat for those following along live so you can apply to become an ambassador for 2026. There's lots of good reasons to put yourself forward for that. There is available on that news post. Great. So Ben, before I want to call out an article that went live earlier this week, because I think it really sets the scene for the year. It's just perfect timing. But before I do that, Ben, how has your week in quality been? What's been happening? You mentioned that you've gone back to work, you're getting settled back into things. What's your world looking like right now?
Oh, yes. Well, it's the start of the year, so lots of planning and prioritization and some brainstorming. Classic beginning of the year, carrying on from the end of the year company things. From a testing point of view, two very different things going on this week more than anything else. First of all, I managed to write a whole bunch more playwright tests, which was very fulfilling, just getting a bit more code shipped for that. So that's quite good fun. And I'm doing the old classic, starting with the login, because of course you've always got to start with login. So we're building a new acceptance test suite. So of course, that's where you always will start. And that's pretty much done now. So now I can move on to other interesting features. And then I've been doing a whole bunch of release testing. I without giving too much away, I have to say, it's been a biggie. I managed to successfully have a bit of a release freeze while I was off over the festive period. But the flip side of that is a rather large beginning of the year release where normally we release twice a week. So the developers have been busier, not busier than I'd like, but they've been busy. So there's lots of cool stuff to get into prod. So it took a bit more iterating than sometimes it does. But the cool thing is we found things during stage testing, during that release testing, before things went to production. So it's always nice to catch stuff early, even if it does take that little bit more effort and back and forth. This definitely feels worth every time we catch stuff before it goes live. It just makes you go, yeah, that's why we do testing. Now I remember.
I like that reminder. It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. Oh, it sounds like a very cool start to the year. Lots of good stuff. But yeah, maybe folks might want to pick up on the test that you were writing about login. That reminds me that we're working with you, Ben, to set up this year's round of software testing live events. So very much looking forward to them. Once we got some good folks, I don't know if I can say names, but from what I have seen, the people that are up for doing software testing live. So for those who are unfamiliar, this is where Ben pairs up with a member of the community and they go testing and they go explore and they describe their process, their approach. It's all visual, it's all interactive. It's an awesome session. So yeah, looking forward to the first one. Once we should go live with the event page soon so folks can sign up for that. But it's going to be a good one because I got a sneaky peek about what it's going to be about. So yes, loving that, Ben.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it. Just to give a little bit of meta, but without giving too much away, we'll maybe announce things in the next week or so. We're going to go for try and do about four sessions of software testing live this year. Maybe we'll squeeze in another one if there's a really good reason, and maybe one of them will get shifted around. But we're aiming for four, and I've already got a good list of people who are keen. But if anyone in the audience knows the format and has seen the software testing live before, and if you're desperate to try and get involved this year, do speak up as soon as possible while we're starting to plan the episodes for this year. And the more interest there is, then the more I will try and allocate things and see what else we can do.
Defo. And if there's many ways, it reminds me that there's all sorts of events happening this year. So, of course, we have Moticon, a one-day conference that we have in October. And the day before that is the Leading with Quality Day event, which is fantastic. So workshops and presentations, discussions around leading and its role within quality. There's many more that we're looking to set up. So a lot more masterclasses that are going to come out this year, along with, as we said, software testing live. There's going to be plenty more lean coffees as well that we're going to run. We experimented with a few towards the end of last year, and they were really exciting. Great way for people to connect and explore topics that matter. So yeah, there's all sorts of ways to get involved, and people can earn stars for participating. Eventually, when people register for events and they join an event, people are going to get stars for that. So that adds to their profile. And also off the back of any event, we as Team MOT, we can spot patterns and join up different outcomes of events to then share reflections as insights. So we've rebranded trends. So trends are now insights. And there's insights everywhere, right? Every conversation we're having, like this episode itself, no doubt will spark some insights that we can write about as Team MOT and members of the community can write about if they want to. And it's all there. It's all up for being played back to the community in many different ways. So if people are up for it, I'm even starting to invite people just for a one-to-one call. We have a conversation that's recorded. We then collectively work out, let's turn that into a short memory post, or let's turn that into an insight. And then that person will get tagged. Then people can get thanked and reshared. And it's just a way of helping people build up their profile. My point being is, every conversation matters and we should capture those conversations and do something with it. Great. So, Ben, should we do a quick check of the chat? What's been happening? I've been lost in my words, and I see there's a lot of chat.
The most important thing, as always, Simon, is that we've moved on to drinks and snacks. And we've got a request, obviously, we've got a request from Nadia to rebrand Lean Coffee to Lean Tea.
Oh, perfect.
Because Nadia doesn't drink coffee, but is a tea drinker. And as an avid tea drinker, I think this is fantastic. Rosie's in support. We've got the idea of changing the beverage each time. And although I do think that lean soda sounds a little bit like slimline tonic or like a diet Coke or something, so I'm not entirely sure that quite the analogy breaks down at some point.
That's brilliant. Well, a bit of history, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I can't remember the exact year, there was Thursday Testing Tea. You might remember that, Ben. That was a play on lean coffee that we ran for a little bit. So it's nice that we got the lean coffees, but yeah, definitely lean teas, lean soda, lean diet Coke. Brilliant. Let's make it happen. Let's make it happen.
Love it. Right, let's get on with the article. Let's stop bearing the lead and let's discuss this topic of ours, Simon.
Yeah, so I'm going to pop a link to it for those following along live to this article. And it's such a powerful article. I read it and I was like, I need to share that everywhere. So I went on a bit of a mission, shared it in the Motiverse Slack, shared it on LinkedIn. I'm yet to do a memory post on it, but I probably should do, sharing my reflections as a learning journal. But it's by Konstantinos Konstantakopoulos. Apologies if I mispronounced the surname there. But it's just a really powerful way to help us step back from all the AI hype and buzz and acknowledge that AI tooling and everything around it is helpful, yet we should just get back to basics. So the argument from Konstantinos is that we have an over-reliance on AI. It creates shallow understanding, blind spots. We miss important context if we're just using AI to come up with stuff and solve problems and come up with ideas. So Konstantinos argues that teams need to get back to basics, prioritizing analysis, shared understanding, collaboration, before we start asking AI to generate tests or plans or risk heavy work. And his argument, which I agree with, is AI is most valuable as a support tool for structured, repetitive, or presentational tasks, once humans have already done the thinking and clarified the problem. And there's lots of quotable items within the post as well. I'll give you a few, like AI helps us move faster, but without human understanding, we're just automating blind spots. AI becomes genuinely valuable when it supports our thinking rather than trying to replace it. And finishing on, AI might run fast, but humans still decide where to run and why. Yeah, lots of good stuff in there. Lots of good stuff in there. And I can see in the chat, Gary Hawk's cracking article certainly rang true of me. And I just thought as something for the start of this year, it's an important message because we'd certainly spotted last year that many folks in the community were anxious about AI. Like, what does it mean for my role? How much do I need to be up to speed with it? What if I'm not using it in my company? Do I need to be using it in case I need to move on elsewhere? So people are nervous and anxious about it. And I feel this article reminds people that it's okay, that it's all about our core skills, our essential way of critical thinking, focusing on risk, focusing on systems thinking, focusing on like real communication with people and not just machines that makes a difference and matters. So yeah, I wondered, I know putting you on the spot here, Ben, but I also encourage people, if they have read the article, to put themselves forward to come up on stage, share your thoughts about it. Maybe there's something in there that resonated or something you disagree with, whatever goes really. I thought we could touch on the article itself and then think in terms of like, if we are going back to essentials, one core part, all the essential parts of exploratory testing. What is it we can do with exploratory testing and AI? When those two things, those worlds come together, what does it really mean? And I'd love to find out from our audience today, who's doing exploratory testing, using exploratory testing techniques, but also leveraging AI to support them in their exploratory testing efforts. So yeah, lots for us to dive into just off the back of one article. But yeah, maybe Ben, let me start with you. Yeah, what are your initial thoughts on it and how... Yeah, what are your thoughts on it at this stage?
Cool. So first of all, full disclosure, I have not read this article. So of course, the first thing I've done is gone and stuck it into ChatGPT and asked it to summarize it for me. So I've got a bit of a summary here. I'm going to take a quick look. So it's broken it down into some key points. AI limitations in testing. We're forgetting fundamental testing principles. Where AI adds real value. This looks like it's just taken the headings from the article verbatim. It's not done anything Brilliant. Very clever there at all. Human-centered testing still matters most. Vision for testing with AI. And then the takeaway is AI accelerates productivity in specific well-defined areas, but cannot replace human insight, context, risk awareness, and judgment, the core of meaningful testing. So I quite like that summary because I do think that human insight, context, risk awareness, and judgment are the core of meaningful testing. So that's a nice takeaway.
Yeah, totally. That's what really stood out for me. That we're not at that point where a machine could do that. Maybe at some point in the future, who knows? But right now, that's not really possible. And I see a hot take from Sean Vernier. Thanks for sharing, Sean. Sean says the following: hot take, AI is an amplifier for people that think QA is clicking buttons. And Rodolfo Henry, thanks Rodolfo. AI will certainly add forever protection against unemployment for testers. Gotcha. Nice one. Well, here's hoping, right? We're constantly going to have to be testing these systems that are AI infused. And yeah, maybe we will see much more growth in AI-related job roles. So that's certainly a trend or an insight that we want to track over the year. Perhaps with the job ads that are getting posted on ministryoftesting.com, we can parse that data and see if there's more job roles with AI in the title. That'd be an interesting one to spot.
So do you think that the rebrand of testers into quality engineers is going to peak, and maybe now we're going to start to see AI testers becoming the next thing again? Back to the AI testers. Just like we were humans doing a role that was a process or a principle before, now will be humans that are doing what should have been a tool, right? So
yeah, well, let's watch this space, right? The good thing about the Motiverse is we can spot all this stuff, and it's also related to, we have our salary database, which we'd love to do more with. So people can go onto the salary database, they can put in their job role, location, share what their salary is, plus a few bits and pieces about benefits that they receive, and it's all anonymized, of course, and location-based. And yeah, we will eventually present that data back to our professional members, so you can get a real insight as to the salaries that certain roles in certain locations are receiving. And maybe in the salary database, we can start to see AI tester or quality engineer in AI. Coming through.
You joker.
But we shall see. We shall see. But for those who are just sticking around as quality engineers, we've got the software quality engineering certificate for people who really want to get into it. So we've been working on module 3 of that certificate this week, and hopefully we're going live with that. So I've been reviewing that, and it's a good one. A lot of good stuff in it, as always, with these certificates. So yeah.
So
nice reminder.
I'll jump in with one quick thing, and then we've got some more nice comments in the chat. So I'm now a very regular user of AI. We're a very AI positive and AI first company at Mimica.ai. It's a surprise. And so I tend to use the ID cursor or sometimes the Visual Studio Code, but with the Copilot plugin. And I definitely reached a situation which I think will be unsurprising to many of you in the audience this week, where I was writing some of my playwright, and then I got to a point where, like, I do not have a good way to stably identify these particular parts of the page, these elements. I know, let's go and update the front end and add some data test IDs. So actually, using my AI IDEs, I was able to very quickly make a PR that my front-end devs could review and approve to add in data test IDs. And it was great because I could make the PR very quickly and get the problem solved, which was very good. Of course, when I came to use them, despite the fact I explained to the AI exactly why I was using them, it had made a mistake, and it did data dash test dash ID instead of data dash test ID as one word. So I had to update it the moment I came to actually use it because it didn't actually work. But hey, it got all the way into the code base approved by two developers before we found out it was broken. So something's working, right?
Yeah, something's working. I like it. That's a great use case and example, right? It's like, I think there's so much more to explore and for folks to out in the Motiverse to start sharing, like just short, sharp, here's what I did this week. Here's how I used AI in a positive way to support my testing efforts. And I'd love to, again, thinking about exploratory testing where people are defining charters or they're like, oh, what heuristics will I use for this exploratory testing session? Or maybe what oracles do I need to use? And then with their note-taking, like what kind of different ways of note-taking can they do with AI-assisted tooling? How could AI-assisted tooling parse that data and kind of present that data to people in a way that's easy to parse if they're reporting back during a debrief, that kind of thing. I'd love to for us to start gathering examples of that, because I certainly come from a background where I was running exploratory testing sessions pre-AI, right? I had a tool that I'd built and it would help you define some charters. It would help you capture notes and group them by like problem, question, idea and praise, and then run a little debrief session and all of that stuff. But that was before we were met with these AI tools, so an AI system. So yeah, I'd love to know if there are people in the audience today who just doing anything, even a teeny tiny thing that supports their exploratory testing efforts. We'd love to hear from you, and you're more than welcome to join the stage.
Yeah. And do come and join the stage. I'm going to read a couple bits out from the chat and then encourage people to join in. So AD said, AI is a tool, not a solution for quality work. Is an AI tester someone who tests AI or uses AI in testing? And then Nadia says something very similar. She said, would an AI tester be testing AI let me put my teeth back in. Would an AI tester be testing AI or AI testing? And then they're debating because AD was quick. And Mathili says, happy balance looks like ask the right questions early in the process. Collaborate deeply. Understand the system before automating the scenarios around that. Is gold.
That's gold. Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah,
we'll take that every day. Love it. Gary says, that's one of the few examples I've heard of someone using AI to make things better, not just faster and cheaper. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, no, it was a good example. We've got more. What else we got? AD says, I'd like to give AI what I've done and ask what I've missed or not considered. It's roughly 50-50 on suggestions being useful. Interesting. Yeah. I think that really opens up a good point, AD, which is that, and I forget exactly who said it, but I'm sure it was said at least at the, maybe you'll remind me, Simon, at the Leading with Quality session we had in Brighton last year, it was definitely said that AI tools are for experienced people. They're for the person who knows what they're doing, because you need to use them in the context of you can tell the tool it's wrong and get it to correct itself.
Yeah. Was that Ash Coleman-Hinye who shared that, or was it Keith Klein? I can't remember.
I think it was Keith.
It was Keith, wasn't it? Yes. Yeah.
I don't think he was the only one to say something similar, but I think it was Keith I was searching for. So yeah, I forget the exact phrasing. But it was basically around the idea that, yeah, you've got to know enough that when you're using the AI tools, you know whether to take which half of the 50-50 you take and which half you go, no, you're wrong. So that's another interesting take.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. Yeah, more stuff coming in on the chat. So we have Rodolphe sharing, at the moment, it's much more AI testing testers. Indeed, yes. It really is. Oh boy. Richard Adams shares some good information. I used AI agents to check JIRA and RCA results to identify good places to exploratory test. Oh, that's a good one, Richard.
Nice.
If you're up for it, if you are up for joining us up on stage, maybe we can dig into that a little bit more, Richard. That would be very cool. Welcome, Judy. Oh, yeah, go for it. Go for it, Ben.
Yeah, welcome, Judy. No, I was just going to unpack that RCA, I believe, Rich, means root cause analysis.
Yes. Yeah.
Just for those who pick up on the acronym, that would be investigations to when something went wrong, something like an incident production, and then the root cause analysis would be details of things that have gone wrong. So what Rich is saying there is things that have gone wrong before, he's using to be able to find out places to test again. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I know Richard's been blogging, end of last year around RCA, root cause analysis, and worth checking out Richard's blog post when you get the chance. I would just recommend head over to just look for his Ministry of Testing profile. No doubt he will have a link to his blog on his profile page. So go check
John
it out.
Simon, let's get Gary on stage. So Gary, you've joined on stage. Good luck with your audio. Let's see how far we get.
Gary Hawkes, welcome.
Happy New Year.
Way, we can hear you.
All right, result.
Well, it's a big thanks to you moving to Wistia, because since then I've had no problems at all. So it's all good.
Love it.
Yeah.
Gary, jump on in. Feel free to join the conversation.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things that you were mentioning around the AI. So I read the article, and obviously the more I read it, the more it was resonating with me. And I did say make a comment, which was along the lines of what Ben was saying about his... One, from where I've been working, and is that a lot of the chat I've heard around AI, and that's from blogs, vendors, and so on, has always been about how faster you can get things, how much cheaper it will be. But there's not much chatter around making things better, using AI to make things better. And that's always been my big concern, because if you're making things better using AI, then you're taking responsibility for it, because someone's going to have to evaluate whether it's better. You don't need to have someone evaluate if it's cheaper, and you don't need someone to evaluate whether it's faster, because it will be faster. So I think that's really important to me. And like from the exploratory testing side, I think we've got like a pilot project that we were using, and we've been working on analyzing the stories before they even come into development. Once they've been refined and put in there, it's basically using some AI and just, I think I shared a club post on a particular prompt. And I think Callan did one, a very detailed prompt as well about analyzing stories and so on. But I did a kind of simple prompt that we use to, as an assistant, we'll analyze the story, look at the scenarios and look at the ambiguities and basically start questioning. But we'll also have a bit of AI that will do exactly the same. And we pair the thing together and we just go, is there anything that the AI come up with that we didn't come up with? And is there anything we disagree with? So we're the ones, so the human is in charge. But sometimes it does. It comes up with things that we go, I never thought of that. So I'm going to ask that question as well. And once you've got the context in there, it's a really powerful thing for reading, really, if you get the context in there for doing that. So that's really helped. And then out of that sometimes can be like ideas for exploratory areas that we should be approaching. So sometimes the stories will have like four kind of scenarios wrapped in them. But from the ideas that we get and that will come from the AI, sometimes we can go, well, we've actually got eight scenarios based on that story, because there's some elements that you're saying in there that kind of compete with each other, and we want to go in between those gaps. So that's where I find the kind of use of it has been really powerful, I think.
There's so much insight in there, Gary. Thank you for sharing. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
We see, please do stay on stage, Gary. Continue with the conversation. I can see we also have Rich and Matilly. So I'm going to bring Rich up on stage so he can jump on in, and then we get you up after that, Matilly. So let's just press the buttons. Rich, welcome. It's good to see you on the stage at This Week in Quality. I hope you're well.
Hey, it's good to see you.
Wonderful. Yeah, feel free to jump on in. Go for it.
Yeah, so I thought I'd tell you a little bit more about the AI agent thing that we did. So I originally started where I was using Notebook LLM, and you can upload details to that and give it context and background, and then I could ask it questions to help guide where to test or where the risks might be. And what I did is we did it as a hackathon project, is we then took agents and contacted Jira and RCA document to get lots of information about where things have gone wrong in the past to help guide us. It would also connect to Jira to find about the story that you're testing as well. take a look at the ACs and sort of make interpretations from that to understand it. So it was quite nice. You could just give it a wee story ID, and it would be off running away doing fun, exciting things. We even got it to do like full test plans, although they were a little generic, but we did give it lots of context. And like, you could also get it to look at things like Confluence and architecture architecture pages as well, so it can understand what exactly it's talking about. Because I find if you just use an AI straight away, it doesn't have the context and it comes up with generic nonsense. But if you give it good context, it's really powerful.
It's fascinating that the context word appears again and again. It's like, if we give humans good context, then we can make better decisions, right? When it comes to quality and focusing on what really matters and truly understanding risks. So that's cool, Rich. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yeah, there's much more to be said on that. But yeah, Ben or Gary, feel free to jump on in to share some thoughts on what Rich has just shared.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask you a question, Rich, and maybe this will be an obvious answer, but one thing we've been discussing is really at work is that the more we want to use AI in the future in order to do interesting things with our code base, the more that it will be valuable for us to have good documentation to feed the AI so that it understands our domain context. Is that something that you've come across that's maybe a bit relevant to the stuff that you were doing and trying out?
Yeah, very much so. And because our documentation was terrible, it was really difficult for us to feed it meaningful information. Our docs were shared with the entire organization, and this was a Fortune 500 company. So our bit of the business doing one product was shared with everybody.
Oh, Rich, if you can hear us, your audio has dropped out. I'm just wondering if that's also happened for others on the call.
Yeah, I think I can see that the signal, indicator from Rich has also dropped off. And now it's dropped.
He's officially dropped. No worries. Hopefully we can get Rich back on. But in the meantime, Matilly, I'd love to hear from you. Great to see you join the stage. Yeah, feel free to jump on in and get stuck in with the combo.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, from my experience, last few months, I have been like continuously using AI to help with my learning. Because in 20 years, whenever I had to learn something new, it was either YouTube channels and then asking some person or any code issues, Stack Overflow, and other kind of stuff. But this time, only after following YouTube channel without asking any human, I completely relied on AI. It definitely depends on how we are using, and the best prompts or the quality context what we provided. Otherwise, you will be messed up and confused. It gives so much information. Definitely, you have to pick up the best bits of it. If you use AI to enhance your work, it's good. But if you use AI without any goal or motive, then it will not be great. That's what I feel. So definitely you should use it to grow and develop. That's what I have learned. And that made me to create my GitHub repo. I have shared it in the link, and I think others can see in the Slack, and would be nice to hear the feedback. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matilly, and do stay on stage. You might just want to move your mic just slightly further away from you, just getting a little bit of feedback on that. But yeah, no, it's a very good point that learning with AI can be super useful, but you got to take the best bits. That's very true. Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for that link on the Slack. Maybe we can get Simon to reshare it on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Shared it a little bit earlier, but let me just, for timing wise, let's pop it back in the chat yet again. If folks want to dive into that, do go check it out. And yeah, as Matilly has asked for, share some feedback. But yeah, using AI as a tool to learn is wonderful. Yeah, my brain was going down a rabbit hole with something else, but I will hold out from that because we have Rich Adams back. Let's get him back on stage. So, Rich, please do continue. I can't remember the exact point that you dropped off. My apologies, but do dive back in again.
Okay, sorry about that. But yeah, I was just saying that we've had docs that have been quite distributed and scattered, out of date, and shared with lots of other projects. It was quite difficult to get the AI to focus, the agent to focus. The other thing that Ben mentioned was around code, and there's something we started looking into, which is known as a crap score. I forget what it stands for, but I'll yes, maybe one to Google. And it's about how good the code is. So you can look at like change rates, frequency, things like that. So if you've got a change that's coming that's in an area that's got a low score, you know that it's a higher risk for testing. So that was quite neat. And because it was looking at the user stories, they look at the code base to see where it was going to be, what the scores were like, and then tallying that up with like previous bugs as well, it was quite handy for letting you know about the risks and where to look.
Oh, I've not heard that one before, Rich, but I've just looked it up, at least one interpretation of what it means. That's something that we should add to the MOT glossary. There you go. It's the ever-growing glossary of all sorts of terminologies and definitions. So, yeah, that's very cool.
I'm just smiling at this testing.googleblog.com entry on it from February 2011 about that just says this code is CRAP, and it has a nice little note at the top that says this post is rated PG-13 for use of mild expletives. If you're likely to be offended by this repeated use of a commonly heard word in the element, oh yeah, Bob, anyway, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, let's say.
Good stuff.
So it looks like CRAP is short for change risk anti-patterns. At least that's the Google blog interpretation. Maybe there are others.
Yes, that's my interpretation too as well, with a very quick bit of research, thanks to Perplexity AI. There we go. Excellent. Oh, this is great. So we're getting, I think encouraging folks to share their experiences. I wonder, we should find a way to capture this. Of course, we're capturing it right now on this episode, but I wonder if there's a way, a collection of around like how I'm using AI to do exploratory testing. Like, I know it's a big, wide question and wide topic, but it could be that people post a memory post or they blog write about it, what they're doing, and then we can add that to this collection. So people get short, sharp, like small chunks of ideas, and the blog post or memory post doesn't have to include thousands and thousands of words. It's just like, here's one thing I'm doing, here's another thing I'm doing, and that's another post. And when people add that and connect it to their profile, then they're going to start filling up their profile with more helpful things, more opportunities to collect stars. And also, I think let's acknowledge that one of the reasons we use AI to help with our learning is time is precious, and sometimes we can't consume a massive article, or we can't consume a talk that's 30 minutes long. So if we can break things down into smaller chunks, which is what we tend to do when we're using AI tooling, that can also help as well. So I think the taking a step back for Ministry of Testing in 2026, we are certainly encouraging folks to share things in smaller chunks, or at least if people are doing things in bigger chunks, such as speaking at a conference on a stage, that we can take that information and break it down for people and give them a way into it so they can then go deeper and really go for it with their learning with a particular topic or specific talk, but just give them a way in which sparks something in them. I think that becomes very interesting when it comes to learning.
I was going to touch on a point that Matilly made, and it goes back to the sort of coding with AI. Because I think the use of AI, it all depends. I think a lot of us have touched on it, is the motivation behind needing to use it. So my CEO, I think we've basically got a coding agent called Augment. that we use. And he's been very passionate to get the devs to use it, try it, see what they can do, and so on. And he was, if you like, approaching it from, and his language was to me far too risky and far too dangerous, like at times. So I would be very much the skeptic voice trying to rein that in, because it was, I wanted the motivation to be the right motivation, is that, again, it was behind, like, not just using it as an abdication of responsibility, so I can get AI to code this and we'll be done really quickly, is that there's got to be some accountability and some responsibility to it. But it hasn't necessarily been a bad thing, that going through this process of getting the devs to try this out, because we found that the devs are actually moved themselves to be more cautious. There are like a couple in there that there's probably, like, if I'm being more precise, there's one who's a bit still like wild with his uses of AI, but most of the developers have come back to be more cautious and more selective as to when to use it and when not to use it. So actually the kind of trial that I was like dead against at the beginning has actually paid off to a degree, because the devs have found the right areas to use AI, and I've arrived in the middle as the kind of skeptic to go, well, if you're using it for the right reasons and you're still taking responsibility for what you're outputting, then I'm fine with it. And it's the same with testers using it, it's the same principle. And that's, so that was interesting. So I think it's not necessarily a bad thing if you go and like trial and try putting out, like, using AI to put prototype apps together and stuff like that, but then in the end come back to, like, if we want this to be something we want to move forward with, is that, am I comfortable taking responsibility for this, whether it be an automation framework, whether it be a website or something like that. I think that's the kind of like next steps. So yeah, I just thought I'd share that.
That's a really great insight, Gary, and it makes me wonder, because know this terminology, but I've not often had the chance to, shall I say, engage teams on it, but AI is a great opportunity. Are you familiar with the term risk appetite?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if, with my definition of risk appetite simply being the extent to which you're willing to take risk,
yeah,
and that is risk to the quality of the product that you're delivering. And it's interesting because I think that as we start engaging in what could potentially be risky behaviors, it's a really great opportunity to have that conversation with teams and organizations that perhaps should have been had a long time ago, about like what actually is the intended risk appetite or the intended kind of stance of the team, of the engineering department, of the company. Like, I know this is something that they do, that you can do quite a bit with the risk storming, like what are the quality attributes that are important to you and what risks do you care about? But it could be a good in to have that
chat.
Yeah,
it's a really good point.
What I like about that, Ben, and you've mentioned it earlier, Gary, in your previous point, you use the word accountability, you keep using the word accountability, and it's really powerful. It's like, imagine like a triangle. Maybe you've got like risk appetite at the top, bottom left corner, you've got accountability, and then bottom right, like responsibility, and like trying to find the relationship between those three things is complex. And it's like, but maybe as individuals, we can find that, maybe as a team, and then connecting it to like, what does that mean for quality? Yeah, there's some model bubbling away in my head as I vocalize it out loud on this episode.
Absolutely. And it reminds me to promote again the fantastic Charity Majors post. If you liked it, you should have put an SLO on it, which is all about how we should be using service level objectives as our API into the organization for agreeing on what the agreed levels of quality from a reliability point of view should be. Charity says it better than I do, so just go and read Charity's blog. It's great.
Brilliant. If you get the chance, Ben, feel free to repost that in the Slack for those who are part of the Motiverse Slack to remind them that it is a good one, that's for sure. Just a quick thanks to Claire Norman for joining us. Please drop off now, but thanks for the brilliant session. Thanks for being part of it, Claire. Look forward to seeing you at another one for sure. Yeah, accountability. Thinking about it, and I know we're coming close to the hour, but yeah, I had a good chat with Nisha Patel from the BBC earlier this week, and we were talking about ways to contribute, and Nisha's up for doing more in the Motiverse. And we touched on accountability. So I posted a memory post around, like, what does accountability mean to you? So if any folks are up for commenting on that and answering that question, because I think we can interpret that term, like Nisha and I were exploring it together and going, it can mean all sorts of things in different contexts and in different situations and for different people. So it'd be nice to like build the accountability list. What does it really mean to people? So yeah, feel free. Oh, those are my cats in the background fighting if my microphone picked that up. Sorry about that, folks. Wow, there you go. Live cat fight. Ben, if you could take over, I'm just going to break up the cat fight in the background.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Ben.
Yeah, and I'm talking about holding ourselves accountable. I'm just going to do a bit of a time check. It is 57 minutes past, and I, for one, this week have a hard stop on the hour. So I'd like to give Matilly a chance to, have you got anything else, or did you want to respond to Gary's comment there to help finish us off?
Yeah, I can add one of the points, because I'm reading through quite a lot of posts and details on LinkedIn and Ministry of Testing and other. What I noticed that many of the QAs are concerned about the future and the career, what it is. I'm also sometimes a bit nervous, but with AI and with the support of the things which we learn and grow, there is definitely skills. QAs cannot be completely replaced. Some of the skills like critical thinking and exploratory testing, and even for automation side, whatever the code has been like written or generated by the AI, the automation testers should understand it before it can be merged to the master branch, because I have seen some webinars also where they have given a demo, but before going it to the master branch, they have to review it, otherwise it will mess up. And because all the complex projects, there are so many dependencies and other stuff, API calls, you can't blindly depend on AI and just push the code. We are still not in a position where without human interaction, everything will go live. That's my take. Thank you.
And thank you very much for sharing. As we come to the hour, Gary, any final words? And then we'll check in with Simon, see if we're ready to clock off.
Yeah, I just basically, we can't avoid it, AI. We should embrace it. But I think from as quality people is that we're there, like you say, to report on risk and manage risk. So that's what we need to focus on, and AI can't do that on its own, so use it as an assistant. It's my last
well
word.
Said well said, Gary. Well said, Mathilde. And you are both fantastic humans in the loop. Long may that continue. Simon, I think we are coming to the end of the hour.
Yes,
shall we wrap up?
Yeah, let's wrap up. So update on the cats. Yeah, I probably had to separate them. They're having a proper scrap. So they're both okay, but there we go. Wow, who'd expected that live on an episode of This Week in Quality? That's definitely a 406, not acceptable, but these things happen, right? The one thing I do want to mention before we do sign off for today is a post from Rosie, which I'm going to share in the chat for those following along live. It's called, Are You Open to Work? Just a good reminder that the Motiverse is here to help grow your quality career. We have a jobs board, and yes, the jobs board helped Richard Hinton land a new job. So that was wonderful. And also I want to shout out to Becky Norville, who is currently open to work. And you can check out Becky's profile. Again, I'm just going to share a link in the chat for those following along live right now. But yeah, do check out, it's on the homepage right now, the open to work post with a link to Richard's profile and also to Becky, who is open to work at this point in time. And if people are professional members, you can see a full list of everyone who has marked themselves open to work. So if you are a hiring manager, or you're in a hiring manager position right now, or you perhaps can recommend someone and say, oh, this person's looking, try and help people connect and let's help people land their next opportunity. Okay, well, thanks folks for listening today. It's been a pleasure to co-host with you, Ben. As always, I'm loving it. And thank you to everyone who's joined us on stage today. It's been wonderful to hear from you. Good to see all sorts of chat. I nearly said chat action. Keep it coming. Please do join future events. Just head over to ministryoftesting.com/events. You can also sign up to our newsletter. So /newsletter. Rosie puts together a weekly newsletter jam-packed full of helpful information about what's been going on in the community and what's coming up soon. So do go subscribe to that or read it once a week on the site. It appears most weeks on a Monday. Great. Final thoughts, Ben, before we sign off?
Yeah, just the usual, which is a happy new year and keep on testing.
Keep on testing. We'll see you all soon. Bye for now.